And we've got Serena Fass with us. Serena, hello there.
Hello, good afternoon.
It's wonderful to have you on the show. Thank you very much for joining us. It's 11 minutes past two, and we'd just like to talk to you about this wonderful new book that you've got, The Magi. You've sent us a preview copy, and I have to say, I was absolutely fascinated by it. It's a 300-page book, and it's all about the three kings who went to see the baby Jesus. Can you tell us about how you had the idea for the book?
I first got the idea. I was just finishing my previous book called The Cross, and I was looking for inspiration, and Abbot Geoffrey Scott at Dowie Abbey preached the most wonderful Epiphany sermon just before I'd finished The Cross.
Yes.
And I thought, oh, that sounds interesting, because he posed lots of questions. And I thought, well, that would be very interesting to research. I must find out more.
Yeah.
And that led me, obviously, on my computer and endless searching. And I thought, well, yes, there's an awful lot that's said, but never mind about three kings. There's also a lot in the Orthodox Church about there being 12 kings, and some people even say 40. So I thought, well, that really is going to set cats among pigeons. But it might be very good for all the schools who do nativity plays, because instead of only three children having the chance to play a king, they could up it to 40, and that would make a big difference to the parents.
Well, it's a very good idea. Now, you haven't just sort of sat in a library in London researching this. I know you've been travelling all around the Middle East to take photographs and to find sites where the three kings may have come from.
Yes, I have indeed. I haven't been anywhere near a library. I've only been to the library on the computer and to other people much wiser than I who've pointed me at various things. And just to say, that lovely carol that you've all just heard, that particular hymn was written by St. John Chrysostom, who was Archbishop of Constantinople in the middle of the 4th century, and he actually wrote that hymn.
Oh, I didn't know that.
That was obviously he wrote it in Greek.
Yes.
And an awful lot of the things that are in my book are from very early sources, the very earliest Christian sources, which is partly what makes it so interesting. And it's also from all denominations, and the farther east you travel geographically, you know, whether it's me or in the writings and the thinkings, the more they seem to know about the Magi, and the more convinced that they are that there were certainly 12, probably 40, and they came from the Parthian Shah, and Parthia was at war with Rome all the time.
Yeah.
The fault line was right down the Middle East, and they came to Herod with a huge delegation trying to woo Judea onto their side, Parthia, rather than Rome.
Oh, I see.
So there's all sorts of historical things that come into it. There's lots of writing from the Roman period, from Augustus and all that sort of thing. And so it's been an absolutely fascinating thing to research. I've really enjoyed doing it.
Yes, because of course from a historical point of view, it's best to sort of look at contemporary sort of texts, contemporary obviously to that period of time. And we always think of St. Matthew, but there are some, as you say, Roman texts. And also, now, this is something I know very little about. There are some Zoroastrian
There
texts.
Are indeed. I mean, the prophet Zoroaster, who lived around 800 BC, the time of Homer, he foretells and forecasts the birth of a Messiah.
Yeah.
And even more amazingly, that he will be killed on a tree.
Really?
That they will kill him on a tree. Yes, that's all in the book.
And the Zoroastrians were sort of one of the first sort of monotheist
They
sects,
were.
Weren't
I
they?
Think that all our, you know, Judeo-Christianity, and also later Islam, comes initially from the Zoroastrian beliefs, which in turn came from the Hindu beliefs.
Because one of the
very early Hindu beliefs.
One of the fascinating things in your book, I found, was a picture of an angel, which wasn't a Christian angel. It wasn't.
It was a Zoroastrian angel.
Yeah. I didn't realise that they had angels.
They did indeed.
Yeah. So
one of the things I also found very interesting is that the lingua franca for Parthia, the whole Parthian Empire, which stretched, let's say, from Antioch right across to Taxila on the River Indus, they all spoke Aramaic. That was their language. It was also the language of the Roman Empire of the East, Syria, Palestine.
Yes.
Therefore, wherever the Magi travelled, they had absolutely no trouble making themselves understood, whether they wanted water and food for their horses, or their bed for the night, or what their menu might be. Didn't matter what they wanted to talk about. they all spoke Aramaic. And when they eventually reached the Holy Family in Bethlehem, Joseph and Mary spoke the same language, Aramaic.
Yeah, it's amazing. And some people do still speak Aramaic today, don't they?
They do. In the Turab Din region of Turkey, where I went with the Bishop of Sarak a couple of years ago, when I was doing a lot of research there, and they all speak Aramaic. That's all they speak. They don't. They might know Turkish, but they basically all speak Aramaic still.
So I think it's the oldest sort of living language, isn't it?
I think it is. I mean, I think that Sanskrit, but they don't speak Sanskrit anymore on the base of Hindi.
Yeah.
And Hebrew is pretty old, but again, they've only resuscitated that since 1947. And they do speak Hebrew again now, but certainly Aramaic is an incredibly ancient language, and Arabic is derived from it. It's not that dissimilar. People that speak Arabic can understand Aramaic and vice versa.
Now, we're obviously talking to you at a sort of pivotal point in history when terrible things are going on in the Middle East. A lot of people don't realise it's not just Muslims who are fleeing territories in the Middle East. Christians are being persecuted horribly, aren't
they? They're having a terrible time. The ones that I'm trying to raise money for, and hopefully raise a lot of money for, are particularly the Iraqi Christians that have had to flee Mosul when that was taken by ISIS a year ago.
Yeah.
There are 14,000 families living in Erbil with a wonderful priest who I met the other day. He was over to talk to the Houses of Parliament and things, and was going on to America. And this wonderful charity called Aid to the Church in Need, which is a Catholic charity. It's been going 100 years under the umbrella of the Pope, but Pope Francis is very keen on it. And terribly good people running and doing it all voluntarily, and the money goes absolutely straight there, so that anything that I've raised to date will be in Erbil before Christmas to buy them all 14,000 families, hopefully, a slightly better Christmas lunch than they might otherwise have had.
No, I think that's marvellous, and there's a sort of significant portion of the book going as a donation.
Almost all of it.
Is it? Almost all of it?
Well, once I've paid for the printing costs, the publishers have done it for nothing, and I've done it for nothing, so almost everything will be able to go straight out to Syria, to Archbishop Samian Nasser in Damascus.
Yeah.
I mean, if that still exists by the time they get the money, it might have been bombed by then, and to these families in the Nineveh Plains.
Well, I think what you're doing is fantastic, and I would say to listeners, I sort of had a quick look at the book yesterday, and I was really sort of blown away by it. It's a very beautiful book. You learn lots and lots of things that you were never expecting. The pictures that you've got in there, which I know that you and friends who visited Iran, Syria and Iraq have taken, are absolutely beautiful. There's some lovely poetry in there. So Judy and I are going to buy one or two copies for ourselves and for friends for Christmas. And I hope everyone else out there does as well. Can I just let people know where on the island they can get copies, please?
From Lady Grills in Bembridge.
And I've got her telephone number here, which is 873-638. And I'll repeat that. It's 873-638. Isle of Wight is obviously 01983 before that. Also, I think, Serena, you can get it from the shop area on the website.
The Aid to the Church in Need website.
And that's www.acnuk.org.
That's right.
And also, there's going to be, as Judith mentioned earlier today, a Christmas fair at the McCarthy and Stone in Bembridge next Wednesday. And hopefully, if we're able to get that book DHL'd over there in time, Sally is going to be selling that there from 11 o'clock to 3 o'clock.
Excellent.
Which will be fantastic. Very best of luck with it. I know you had a fantastic book launch last week with the Bishop of Southwark. That went very well. It's an incredible cause, and I wish more people would realise quite what is happening to the Christian Church in the Middle East at the moment. It's a very, very tough time for them, and this is exactly the right time of year to think about them.
Well, thank you very much for this. My brother said everybody should forego their huge bills at Waitrose, etc., for their Christmas lunch and send all the money instead out there. They need it, we don't.
Exactly.
We're all overweight and they're starving.
No, that's absolutely right. Well, look, Serena, it's been fantastic having you on the show. Thank you very much indeed. If anybody wants to catch that again, it's going to go up on the homepage of VectisRadio.com. We'll finish off with a lovely piece of music that you chose, which is Three Kings from Persian Lands Afar. And this is actually a lovely arrangement for a guitar and a cello with Craig Ogden and Patricia Kalnan. Thanks very much indeed, Serena.
Well, thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure to be able to talk to you and to all your listeners.
Thank you. Cheerio. Bye-bye.
Goodbye.